6.5%, was it? Is that what the current odds are of the Stanley Cup?
Well, and you, if you look at the round-by-round progression, the Stanley Cup favorite is the Vancouver Canucks.
Like, what a time to be alive!
Talking you through every goalie controversy, scoring slump, and draft lottery bust, this is the C4 Podcast on CanucksHockeyBlog.com. Here they are, the best starting lineup we could afford under the salary cap. Chris, Matt, Anna, and Adam.
Welcome to another episode of the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast, brought to you by Anna and Chris. I'm Chris, she's Anna. We're here together in the, final episode before the postseason, which is, again, kind of weird that we're saying postseason, because outside of the bubble, this podcast... Actually, we had one playoff.
Yeah, that was before my time, though.
Hey? Yeah, but that didn't go very long for. It's kind of
weird,
kind of crazy that we're going to be in the playoffs momentarily. Anna, how you doing, by the way? I mean, we were talking before we recorded, but how you doing?
I'm good. Unlike you, I've had a very relaxing weekend.
Way to let the cat out of the bag about me.
Yeah, sorry, but as our listeners know, you are a parent. I am not.
You want to be?
No.
You can. I can lend you mine.
I'm good. I had just
be like a, it wouldn't be like rent to own or anything. It would be
rent to own. Wow. Yeah. Well, maybe the only scheme where that would work. I've just basically spent the weekend hanging out in my local area, reading, watching some sports. Some disappointing, some, surprising and fun. So
how about that Arsenal result?
Wow, you're really going to come in like that. So, I literally watched this morning two Arsenal games back to back, the men followed by the women. One was incredibly disappointing and the other was, a very clinical 5-0 win. So, Yeah, I guess it ended on a high.
Most clinical type of wins is 5-0.
It ended on a high at least, but yeah, it's been a mixed bag for me. But yes, how are you, Chris, apart from tired?
Tired, exhausted. It just, there's so much going on and it gets worse. Like, we've got so much stacked up for the month of May with my daughter getting into swimming lessons and that. Softball will be underway. She's in ice skating. Like, why we thought ice skating lessons in the spring was smart, I don't know. And like, it's midday, so we have to dress for the rink in the warm spring midday sun, which is not fun. And like, you could say, oh, you layer or what have you. Yeah, but it's not like there's anywhere for her to really, my daughter, to get changed and into more appropriate clothing in the rink. So yeah. Yeah, mistakes have been made, and that goes till June. That's great. The cool thing is that my daughter will have a birthday next weekend. When we record our next episode, I might be dead, because all of these, adolescent girls full of beans are just going to go and, like, destroy me and the pinata that she is going to be getting.
One is metaphorical.
What can I say?
Destruction-wise. Yeah. But what I'm hearing from that is that Ari is going to be in the PWHL for sure.
Well, maybe. I mean, she does like hockey. It's interesting. Like, of all the sports that we sort of watch together, she pays closer attention to what's going on in a hockey game. She particularly likes baseball. I don't exactly know why. It could be that with baseball on TV, they show the strike zone, and she's really particular about how umpires miss calls.
Yeah.
Balls, it's supposed to be a strike ball, what have you, and she's like, man. Soccer, she's just like, she enjoys it, but she's just not into it like I am. A little part of me is sad, but I know she's young and that might change, and maybe it won't, and that's okay, because whatever she wants to do, she can do. But yeah. Oh, man. The experience that I have with my daughter is, sometimes this way, sometimes that way. But on the bigger picture, it's fabulous. Kind of like the Vancouver Canucks.
That's nice. I was going to also, realizing I could have just made a segue between Ari skating and the Worms Worlds, which happened this afternoon as well. I didn't watch it because, I mean, I just
I knew it was on, but I was not. I was outside.
Yeah,
supervising.
But it does seem like a hugely entertaining game. Maybe the best that the World Championships of either men or women's have ever seen. So, big rivalry, and congratulations, Team Canada.
Not hockey related, but the She Believes Cup was held a week ago, and Canada lost in PKs to the United States, which is interesting because the last time I saw these two sides play, Canada lost to the United States in PKs.
Maybe they should practice that, like the England men's team.
Yeah.
Not so good at that.
Kick it with pace. I think
Filip Peronik with his penalty shot, you just can't pick a move and don't change your mind.
Okay, to be honest, when he went to line up the slap shot, I was hoping he'd do it because it wasn't going to work. Like you could tell, he's at the bench. He's, hey guys, what do I do here? Can I tag out? Like,
yeah.
Oh, anyhow, anyway, let's get into all of that in Rewind. So we should probably point out that last episode we had this conversation as to who should start in net for the Vancouver Canucks against the Golden Knights. And after I had sort of suggested that Casey DeShakey was having some troubles, would it be possible that Seelofs, who got a couple of wins, gets a start? And I think we had talked ourselves out of the fact that that was possible. Like, you don't do that. Guess who got the start against the Golden Knights, Anna?
Yeah, I believe it was Artur Seelofs. We clearly thought that the Canucks were more loyal than they are. To me, I just thought it's too little too late. Like, if you need a backup for the playoffs, like, it's Casey DeSmith at this stage. Canucks wanted to try out Artur Seelofs. It looked like a bad call early on, because I would say he looked very shaky.
Shot number one, Vegas Golden Knights goal. Jack Eichel on the power play. Shot number two, Vegas Knights golden goal. Vegas Golden Knights goal. Jack Eichel again. Two shots, two goals. Canucks down 2-0. Halfway through the first period. Yeah, it didn't look good.
It didn't look good, and I would say that, like, something that Seelofs has kind of shown for Latvia and for the baby Canucks is, like, that unflappability, if that's a word. You know, whether they're totally winning or not. Winning, losing, he seems to be, like, just doesn't care that much. Which I think is good in a goalie, but he looked very flapped, you know? Early on, I was like, oh, this is not good at all. Like, he's panicking around the puck. He's missing coverage. Like, he's leaving gaps at his posts. But, you know, like, he did calm down as the first period went on. And so did the Canucks. And, like, let's say the game turned right around.
Well, it didn't. I wouldn't say it turned right around, because that implies that it turned around real quick. It didn't. The Canucks got themselves back into it, but then they proceeded to find ways to get themselves out of it. Garland and Hughes tied up before the end of the period, but that had more to do with the fact that the Golden Knights got themselves into a little discipline trouble, and the Vancouver Canucks power play has figured out how to score goals again.
Yeah, I mean, I'd slow down with that, too. Like, it's still...
I know, we're game one of three, okay? Like, I get it.
But yeah, like, that's the thing. Like, Quinn Hughes, man, like... he's a guy that is unflappable for sure. Connor Garland doesn't know when to quit, like, ever. So, I do think that helped a lot. But, like, being at the game... the atmosphere, like, it felt infectious. So in a way that, like, it was one of those games that, like, felt a lot bigger win than how it seemed on the score sheet.
Well, there was definitely a lot of energy. And the fact that Connor Garland got himself serenaded was, you know, pretty darn cool.
Yeah.
It had absolutely nothing to do with anyone who might have been in the rink.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was just the most adorable thing. Like, he's very, he likes to put himself down a lot. I mean, he described himself as the worst player to ever have that name song.
Yeah, name song.
He's
not good enough to have a named lime that he plays on.
Yeah, exactly. He's definitely not good enough to have a t-shirt for his 400th game. Yeah, just when I thought that JT Miller was funny, he admitted that it was Connor Garland's idea that they should do for someone's game, and then JT Miller stole it. But I do think that, like, Connor Garland's bought something out of JT Miller that I didn't know was there, so fair enough. And by something, I mean a personality.
Yeah. But the Vancouver Canucks, you know, sort of stem the tide somewhat, right? They get that dub against the Golden Knights, a team who could be a potential candidate to play against for the postseason. Mm-hmm. So you lost handily just a week earlier to the same team. So it's good to say, hey, like, we're not the, you know, pushovers you think we are. Against the Coyotes, they proceeded to tell the Coyotes that we are the pushovers who you think we might be. I will admit it wasn't as bad of a Canucks effort as we've seen in the last couple of months. I mean, yes, the Canucks got it to overtime, and they lost in overtime after it wasn't a power play goal, but for all intents and purposes, it felt like it. The Canucks, though, didn't seem inspired until really the third period rolled around. Like, I don't know if they were looking beyond the Coyotes. Maybe they were reading the headlines and wondering if the Coyotes were actually going to find themselves in Salt Lake at some point. Spoiler alert, that didn't occur until the following night in Edmonton. But the Canucks looked lackadaisical. Like, despite the Miller goal in the first to sort of keep the team, in the second to keep the team in it,
that felt when, like, just one spot, right? It just felt like,
yeah,
almost nothing to that game until the very end for the Canucks.
Yeah, like the Coyotes didn't seem all that interested in winning the game in the first period, but then when it became almost somewhat clear to them that the Canucks didn't seem all that interested in winning either, they started to play. It was just weird. I don't know how to describe it. Like, when Dillinger scored in the third period, it felt to me the game was over. I'm like, oh, the Canucks have lost this. The fact that, you know, Garland and Petey get those goals somewhat late in the third. I mean, Petey's goal was on the power play, particularly late. But, I mean, you take that, what, final 15 minutes of the game away, and the Canucks would have lost without it, but still, where was that effort for the full 60?
I mean, really the only guy that was putting in the effort and probably, like, reasserted that effort, like, resuscitated the team, was Quinn Hughes once again. Like,
yeah, well, he puts the team on his back. He is quite literally the captain. The Canucks have, I'm not knocking Horvat intentionally, but, like, the captain that the Canucks have missed, like, Horvat had, like, that playoff caliber where he could try to put the team in carry them.
And I do think,
but, like, we had that with Hank, and we had that.
Yeah. He was
kind of with Naslund, but
Bo was never put in a position to succeed. In the same way that hopefully Quinn is being, but, like, he's passed every test. He's surpassed expectations. But, like, I mean, one of the Coyotes' goals, you could probably put it Quinn Hughes' skates, but, like, really, that's so rare. Like, that's why those mistakes are just shocking, because it's so rare that he makes them. But, like, Quinn Hughes was, like, as he was strong and he was disciplined and consistent, like Canucks were in all disciplines. Like, you can make some arguments about some of the calls. I mean, that Tyler Myers penalty in the first was just ridiculous, but Canucks gave referees too many opportunities to...
Well, I was going to say, like, when you talk about Tyler Myers, it's like, are you going to talk about the cross-check being ridiculous? Because Tyler Myers, it was like he was trying to get himself a penalty. The first one should have been called, it wasn't. The second one was like asking for it. And then the third one was like, hey, I'm going to keep doing this until you actually throw your arm.
No, I am talking about the Tyler Myers penalty in the first one. Yeah. Where he was just near a Coyotes player. But like, yeah, like you say, like there were just so many opportunities. Like maybe like the Zadorov penalty you can argue against, but like they were just putting the refs like asking the question too many times of, is this a penalty?
Yeah.
Like,
well, like the Besser call in overtime. Okay, it's overtime. Generally, the referees hide the whistle. But it's hard to look at that replay and say that Besser didn't have his stick in a position that gets the call. Like, you know, it's hard for me to go and say that, yeah, that shouldn't have been called. I mean, yeah, put maybe my blue tinted glasses here. But fast forward a little bit. When Ronick was pulled down, I'm like, that's a penalty shot. And then I realize I don't want it to be a penalty shot.
I know, but I just did. Even though, like, logically, I think Philip Ronick on a penalty shot is not how you win a game.
Well, it had more for me. It's not so much the Ronick being the penalty shot to, or penalty shooter. It had more to do with the fact that the Vancouver Canucks, if he doesn't score, are still a man down.
Yeah.
Right? Like that was the thing. Yeah, like I'm looking at the clock. Left. I would have much rather it have gone down to like 3-on-3 for a portion and then have Besser skate out of the box and it, you know, turn into a power play to essentially wrap overtime up. But yeah.
Yeah, no, 100%. But I just love penalty shots and they don't get called enough in regulation. Never mind overtime. So.
Well, no. And that was clear, like by all definition. Whoa. I don't know how they would have called it just a penalty. He was clear away when the stick arrived and pulled him down. Like.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, was it Ray Ferraro on the comms? I think so. Anyway, they were saying like...
Yeah, Ray was between the bench.
Yeah, like saying you just got to make a decision, your own decision.
Yeah, don't be talking to the guys at the bench. He was... Make a decision.
Philip Hronek was talking to everyone. And then apparently PD said something and he said, okay, I'll try it. And I'm like, I don't know.
Just take the slapper.
If PD, like, PD's advice is good here for you. Philip, so
yeah.
Anyway,
well, Canucks lost to the Coyotes 4-3. I mean, it is what it is, but they did get themselves the loser point, which is helpful because the Canucks are kind of were putting themselves into a pickle when it comes to holding on to the Pacific Division. And that set up the game this weekend against the Oilers. The Oilers were without Connor McDavid, who is either injured or, you know, recharging for the postseason. But the Canucks seem to understand the assignment. Oh, and I guess we probably left out the fact that Silas had started against the Coyotes
well. He had.
Like, so instead of it being like, oh, one or the other, it's just sort of what we had talked about. But it was... one for both.
And let's just say didn't look super either on.
Oh.
Yeah.
But apparently DeSmith got himself back into the good graces of Coach Tocchet, or I don't know why, again, the two Sheila starts happened.
No, but like with the DeSmith thing, I do think the huge thing with him coming back is Ian Clark, right? Ian Clark has been trusted by both Bruce and Rick, like subsequent Canucks coaches, because they're smart and know that, like, trust your experts. And Casey Smith has been working really hard with Ian Clark. And like, I can't remember who tweeted it. Maybe it was Wags. Maybe it was someone else, Johnson or somebody. But, like, saying, yeah, like, KJ Smith is not a starter. Like, he had, you know, a week off or whatever between starts. And that worked, right? Like, he worked hard. He had the time. But, yeah.
Well, he looked good from what little I saw against the Oilers. And the reason why I saw little is I happened to be at the Whitecaps match where they lost to the Los Angeles Galaxy 3-1 as well. But the Canucks won 3-1 in Edmonton. That 3-1 result is handy because the Vancouver Canucks were going into that game, I want to say, 3 points ahead of the Oilers, who held games in hand.
Yeah.
So, you know, getting that proverbial 4-point win, the fact that they got two on the Oilers and the Oilers technically got zero and therefore can't make that up, gives the Canucks sort of that bit more in regards to having destiny within their control. I watched a little bit of the highlights, and it felt to me that the Vancouver Canucks got the message that their effort or lack thereof against the Coyotes for a majority of the game was not going to be an acceptable result in Edmonton.
Mm-hmm. And it does seem to be like, I mean, it was kind of back to what we've seen earlier in the season from the Canucks, the bend not break thing of weathering the storm. Oilers, like, were dominant for, like, a lot of the early periods of the game, and yet Canucks just, like, held them down, like, didn't, like, let the floodgates open, only allowed
and then got goal. Points from non-traditional sources.
Exactly. Sam Lafferty scored.
Pia Suter.
Like, Lindholm got a point on the empty netter from Dakota Joshua. Yeah, I thought it was great. Like, also Zadorov just quietly becoming a pretty good attacking threat as well, which is helpful, and hopefully we'll keep Tyler Myers out of the, you know, final part of the ice there, but we'll see. But yeah, I think that was a really complete effort from the Canucks, from, like, DeSmith forward. And secondary scoring is going to be so important, because you've got to say that's a big worry for this team. Is that beyond?
Well, and you think about the early success.
Yeah.
It was secondary scoring was a big factor, right? Like, they were getting points throughout their entire lineup. Yeah, they were bending. They weren't breaking. And as things started to come down to earth again, well, it was becoming more and more apparent you just had to shut down the top line.
Yeah.
Make sure that you don't allow Quinn Hughes all that much opportunity to work his magic, and there wasn't much else that you had to worry about, save for Connor Garland. But there's no means of stopping Connor. You can only slow him down.
100%. But yeah, like, because looking at the scorers, like, Sam Lafferty has 13 goals, which is his career high. Like, even though he hasn't scored for so long, I think he had a goal a couple weeks ago, but previous to that, like, hadn't scored in a while. Pia Suter has 17 goals. Like, he hasn't scored as much as you.
14.
Oh, 14.
Dakota has 17.
Oh, you're right.
I'm always right. That's what I tell my wife.
Sorry, I clearly looked at that earlier. Like, 14 goals, like, less than you'd like, but still okay. So I do think that is what we're talking about. The secondary scoring was good. That was getting them through tough games. And it has been absent for a little while. So, yeah, hopefully that's the start of that recurring. But, like, I do think this win is huge from a psychological perspective. Yes, it would be nice to win the Pacific Division, but it doesn't necessarily help us out in terms of opponent.
No. But beating a team like the Oilers shows that you can beat just about anyone.
100%. And, like, the fact that Edmonton is so worried about Connor McDavid that they have to, like, take him out of the lineup. And, like, they only have one game left after Canucks, correct?
Yeah, they've got one game in hand on Vancouver, but as it stands, like it's a 5-point difference. They would arguably need 3 wins if the Canucks get one more.
Right. But
I mean, it's a done deal.
I do think it's huge that they clearly Connor McDavid's not 100%. So they're taking him out of the lineup before the playoffs, which obviously resting players is a thing, but you would think Connor McDavid, who is more machine than man, would like that sort of run up. Mm-hmm. But anyway, yeah, I do think that's a huge psychological mark on the board.
I was just looking at the game stats here, and you talked about how, Edmonton was quite dominant, especially in the early goings of the game. I'm like, I don't know. I mean, looking at the shots, it's like 33-27. I mean, that's not all that dominant. Then you go down to block shots. The Canucks blocked 21.
Yeah.
The Oilers blocked 8. Oh, got it.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I don't know. I get there are many different thoughts about block shots. I'm of the mindset that this is the time of season when you start to sort of put the body online. Maybe not going to lay it out game 2 of the season per se. So that might be handy to have available to you in your toolkit. Also increases the likelihood you get hurt.
Yeah.
And hurt bad. Which comes down to who's doing the blocking. Like, is PD laying out?
Yeah, but talk about unlikely people blocking shots. Connor Garland, because he can,
to be honest, he's so close to the ice. Right,
but the way he does it is smart. I think it was in the Stanchies, so yeah. Anime of the show, why aren't, broke down, I think because...
He knows what he did.
Yeah, he does. And he often analyzes the way Tyler Myers blocks shots, which is the slip slide. But Connor Garland, the way he does it is not committing to that slide. So if he doesn't block the shot, he's not completely out of position or out of the game. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think Connor Garland...
What you're saying is you should not flop on the ice.
Yeah, and mainly because maybe Connor Garland doesn't take up that much of the ice. So that wouldn't help a ton. But I think it's just another example of how he's had to outthink people because of his size.
Yeah, I mean, he's not that small. He's only, 6 foot negative 13?
Yeah, something like that. I really need the NHL to, either remeasure people or just say, in brackets with skates. Because, I think it says online that Connor Garland's, 5'10". Which, babe, you're not. Yeah.
Stretching them out, marrying from tippy toes to, the mohawk he put his hair in or something like that. Looking ahead at the last two games that the Vancouver Canucks have, they've got the Calgary Flames coming to town for Tuesday, and they've got the Winnipeg Jets on the road on Thursday to wrap up the season. The Flames are an interesting team.
Sure.
I'd have to think that that's a W for the Vancouver Canucks. I mean, it needs to be, but I don't know what's going on in Calgary these days.
I mean, I don't think I've ever known what's going on in Alberta, I'll be honest. But yeah, they're just such a meh team, right? Mm-hmm. They're not even tanking. They're just, meh. They're in that mushy middle. But in fairness to Calgary, they're doing pretty badly, but...
I was going to say, mushy middle. I would say they're more at the mushy bottom. they're not quite San Jose Sharks level.
That's the thing. As dominant as the teams at the top of the West have been... the teams that are worse in the league are definitely in the West too. So it's just they're just a class above Chicago, San Jose, because everyone is. But yeah, they're just
In the West, they're the best of the worst.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Right. Calgary, Seattle, Arizona. soon to be Salt Lake. They're, you know, close to the 80-point threshold in a league that gives loser points. Not anywhere near enough to have been in playoff contention late in the game. But, yeah, not Anaheim, Chicago, San Jose, or if we go into the East, Columbus. But Columbus isn't even as bad as those teams. They got 64 points. Winnipeg. Winnipeg is an interesting spot because they'll have a good idea as to where they are. And if they wanted to manipulate the standings, it's all for naught. I believe they will know their position or their opportunity to either finish second or third in the Central before the puck drops. And, you know, it could be that they've got second locked. And if they got second locked, then there's no movement. I mean, they'll play, but they'll likely play safe. Vancouver, on the other hand, I would love nothing more than have the Vancouver Canucks locked up in the position, whatever it happens to be, so that they can equally ensure the likes of, you know, Quinn Hughes, Liz Peterson, JT Miller. I mean, I'm not so much worried about JT because as long as he's got some F's in his back pocket to give out, all is good. But, like, you know,
yeah,
take that opportunity to play the third and fourth line. Get an opportunity to have Niels Ullmann in some greater minutes in action. To me, that's what I'd love for the Canucks to do.
Okay, yeah. To me, the most important thing this week and the remaining two games is Thatcher Demko. It's
you think he starts on Tuesday?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
I think they were being, like, he was close, but they didn't want to commit to Saturday. And, I don't know, maybe slightly worried about Evander Kane and Corey Perry doing something dumb. I don't know. But, like, Calgary don't, like you say, they have nothing to play for. And, yes, I would like some of the, like, fourth liners slash extras to get some more minutes. But, yes, I think Thatcher Demko has to be the priority, even above winning the Pacific. I mean, Canucks need one more point or Edmonton to lose again to win the Pacific. But, like, yes. I would love to win the Pacific. I think that's a good moral victory to start playoffs off well, but yeah, Thatcher Demko is far and away the most important priority in the next two games.
Yeah. Edmonton plays the Colorado Avalanche. That's their final game, the Avs and Oilers.
I mean, who knows with the Avs? Like, they just lost 7-0 to Winnipeg, so...
Well, but that's the thing, like when I was talking about how Winnipeg should know, Winnipeg plays Seattle first. If Winnipeg gets the win there, there's nothing that Colorado can do to go and take that spot away from the Jets.
But yeah,
if the Jets lose to Seattle, it's that creates an interesting scenario. But if I were to rank and priority what I want to happen, Vancouver gets the win against the Flames, they guarantee top spot. Then they can play smart, restful hockey. against the Jets.
Yeah.
I don't want it to be where the Vancouver has to sort of look in the rearview mirror because the Oilers are nearby. The Oilers are then playing the Avs. The Avs may not have a shot for the Jets and, you know.
Yeah, I don't think.
All of that kerschmuzzle.
Because second or third, that's the only playoff matchup that's set right now. So, I don't think they'll really care which way round it goes. Like I say, I think for everyone, every playoff team, the priority will be getting their head right and their play right. And for Vancouver, I think that comes down to the goaltending.
Yeah. Well, the Vancouver Canucks, if they get first in the Pacific, they guarantee themselves that, you know, second spot. Where it gets messy is... if the Oilers were to catch them, then it comes down to, well, how many points does Vancouver have compared to the Jets? I don't know how the Avs and Canucks. Well, no. So if the Avs were to catch the Canucks in points, I think the first tiebreaker would be wins, would it not? So like regulation wins?
It wins.
Oh, Canucks. So yeah, Canucks would have regulation wins. So it's Canucks would. So wins, really, yeah. You're right.
Then it's
it would be the Canucks could fall as far as four.
Yeah,
that's the home ice advantage, and then
yeah,
they would play if they fell as far as four. They'd play the Avs. I wouldn't want to see a Vancouver Colorado series. I have some nightmares as it relates to Vancouver and Colorado in the playoffs.
I mean, the thing is, they're playing like the more than likely opponent is Preds or Vegas.
Well, that's presuming they finish.
Yeah. Okay. But you know, but that's top of the position. Yeah. And either way, I'm terrified of that. Like, and I've said that I pick the Preds, and I do think that's the better matchup for the Canucks. But like, they haven't played Nashville in a while since they've been on the heater. So, yeah.
Yeah. Right now, if the puck were to drop in the postseason, the Vancouver Canucks would actually be playing the Kings.
So, is that right? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's so smooshy at the bottom.
It's funny. Yeah, like when you read the tie-breaking, obviously the first one is like, because tie-breaker procedure goes all the way through the regular season to determine where people sit. So obviously the first one is who has played the least, like who has the best points percentage. And then you're like, oh, right, okay. Well, yeah, that does not matter at the end of the season, obviously. That wipes that out. Not. But yeah, it's quite funny how far down the tie-breaking goes. It doesn't say, like, if there's ever been an occasion where everything's tied. I guess that just is so unlikely.
They draw lots.
Yeah. Because I think in football, like, in tournaments, they've had to flip coins before. Maybe they need more.
Yes.
More tie-breaking procedures. Yeah.
So, I mean, off the rails here, when I was coaching softball, we were in a provincial tournament, the team I was coaching, and there was a three-way tie. And we're like all of the tie-breaking criteria, while not equal, no one team could eliminate the other two. And so it came down to a flip of coins.
Yeah.
And thankfully, the team I was coaching, we won our first, like the first, I don't exactly know how that went. It was like, we won the first two or whatever. So then we were through. We didn't have to then have like the second chance flip because two of the three teams were going to qualify. But it does get to that point in many different cases. It just becomes, okay, well, we got to do something. Chance, draw lots, yeah. Flip coins.
So, I mean,
happens to be.
We'll get back on the rails in milliseconds. But as I Googled this, because I knew there was a few examples throughout history, there's an article about it in The Guardian called Lucky Tosses. So if you want to hope that's not an explicit rating. But
well, the word tosser is sometimes interpreted differently.
Mm-hmm. And of course, I mean it as in tossing a coin.
Totally. You would. Why would I think anything of the sort? How rude of me to have even considered it, Anna.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what? Let's take a break. I'll compose myself. I will apologize to you profusely. You're listening to the C4 Canucks Hockey Podcast from Anna and Chris.
He liked to say the F word.
Oh, then get the f*** here then. Okay, see ya.
Right off.
Oh. Is going to have the F word on it.
I wish I could give you an explanation about it. I can't.
You out of here.
You said the F word, Dad.
You called me the F word.
Speaking of tossers, how about that game against between the Rangers and Devils a few weeks back?
Yeah, that was something else. Our old pal Travis, like, didn't go full torts because you should never go full torts. But like,
you can't. There's no coming back from full torts.
Like now, because it was a couple weeks ago, I can't remember which way around it was. But like, this was somewhat inevitable that something was going to happen. And then when I think Travis was the one starting his fourth line. But maybe I'm wrong about that. But yeah, like, Matt Rempe is like... Yeah, anyway, like the Canucks-Flames game of yore at Park Drop. Devils Rangers descended into a line brawl. Yeah. There's many things that concern me with seeing that again. Like, obviously it's funny. Like, it's definitely funny. But, and the fact that, like, it's only happened, like, maybe two or three times in the last decade.
Of which... Yeah. The Rangers and Devils were one of the times.
The other times, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, like I think it might have been just past a decade more. It was like 2012 or something like that.
Oh, God, the fact that that was more than 10 years ago is frightening. But yeah, so it doesn't happen that frequently. It gets hockey some attention, right? Like, I saw it come up in, you know, English sports feeds and that kind of thing.
But is that the attention the league wants?
Maybe, but it's not the attention they should be looking for. Like, yeah, it's like, not going to make people watch hockey.
The hockey-crazed existing fan base, there are many of them out there. And I'll even admit to it, like the Vancouver-Calgary tilt. Oh my goodness, I was edge of the seat. Mm-hmm. Like, what's going on? This is... But, like, in retrospect, like, what point does that serve? A message was sent? The coach went mad? Like, I mean, I honestly look back at that. I'm like, oh, I don't get it. Outside of the fact that Bieksik can claim that he's, you know, 100% on the face-off dot.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. To me, and just, like, on the Matt Rempe point, it's just, like, another kind of blot in his copybook in terms of a worrying trend of him... getting into fights and or dangerous plays that, and I think we talked about it before in relation to the CTE thing that hockey still refuses to recognize as being problematic and heavily linked to the concussion side. But yeah, he's such a young player and I really worry about him that this is how he thinks he like earns respect in the league. And earns his spot.
Well, but that role is still appreciated.
Yeah.
In the NHL.
And, like, by fans, like you say, like, there's a certain subsection, I would say, like, a fairly large subsection of fans that are, yeah, just, like, appreciative of that. I will say, like, yeah, it gets hockey a lot of attention, but people... Those people that say, oh, that's so cool, like, hockey's really tough, like that, they don't, you know, tune in to watch the games the next week. Maybe they watch a couple more fights on YouTube, but they're not gonna, like, be made into hockey fans. Yeah. I don't think that's, like, yeah.
But it propagates the continued stereotype in my mind.
Yeah.
Like, it's not, it's a, you know, barbaric game. Like, I think, at least I'd like to think that the barbaric nature of sport is no longer appreciated as it once was. And more people look at that as like, that's not actually a mature experience.
Yeah. I mean, I 100% agree with you. Just, like, some of the incidents we've seen where, like, you know, hockey just, like, really drags itself back into the dark ages with stuff like, you know, the slapshot empty netter. That was,
oh,
like,
the code. Don't break the code.
It's just, like, don't get too smart. Don't be too cute. Don't be, like... Really, like, hockey needs to be encouraging the smart, skilled, exciting, interesting players that show some personality, that do cool, funny, maybe cheeky thing sometimes, and not saying, like, beating that down. Like, it's just so retrograde. Yeah, and part of not, like, what we don't like about hockey culture, and another thing we don't like about hockey culture is that sort of toxic masculinity code of silence that we've talked about, and we did see, I believe it was this week, John Tortorella, when is he not on our minds, talking about how they knew Carter Hart was, like, gonna be arrested, or they knew it was a possibility that he was gonna be out for the season. It's like, when Calgary said they didn't know, like, weeks before.
Well,
like, no one believed that, obviously.
No.
But it's just,
like, oh, we thought it was for his personal well-being. Yeah. We're shocked as you are.
Yeah. It just makes a mockery of it, and it just, once again, yeah, like, just hammers home that idea of, like, protecting your own. Yeah. And it's gross.
There would be some, though, Anna, that would say, innocent until proven guilty, so why should they be punished before being found to have done something? They're only accused.
I mean, we are, like, I would say that the NHL is not the legal system, so yes, they shouldn't be legislating or litigating anything, but, like, you have a responsibility to your fans.
Yeah. The Vancouver Canucks are many things, and they are far from perfect, but you can actually point to situations where they decided, you know, whether that is true or not, we don't need what you bring to the table.
Yeah.
You don't epitomize our team
and
or our culture.
I really do think that was a really good move by the Canucks, and something I really respected. Let's not take away from the fact that they have two players on their team who have been accused of. But yeah, I think, like, Jake was, it might have been the last straw with Jake, but, and who knows, if he was a better player, maybe they would have
put up with him. That is a sign to me there is some change at glacier pace taking glacier pace happening.
Yeah.
The Philadelphia, though, I mean, are you surprised that they would know and
would be like,
well, what's plan B if we need to get to it? Like, they're reinforcing how, oh, Torts is back. This is the type of culture. This is good Philadelphia Flyers hockey. And I mean, you know what? I've never lived in Philadelphia. I don't know anything more about Philadelphia than what I consume through media and what I see. But it reinforces sort of the stereotype. And that could be that maybe I'm the progressive nut job in the West Coast that, you know.
Yeah, but I agree. It's not what I want to see from hockey either. And, like, not that this is on the same scale, but John Tortorella, like, I know some people find him entertaining, and there are players who still love playing for him. I mean, friend of the show.
Hey, when Frankie was...
Frankie loves him.
Yeah.
And I get that, but I also get the fact that, like, literally, if you won't answer media questions, like, you're not doing your job. Like, to me, that's not doing your job, like, because the fans have access.
Who do you think you are, Larry Brooks?
But the fans have access through the media, and,
you know,
it shows disrespect to fans. I care more about
not defending Tortorella, but hockey embraces them. I mean, we've talked about this in 20 different ways. Last week we were talking about how it's so frustrating that, like, injury reports are still opaque.
Yeah.
Like, hockey is, like, Tortorella is not the only one. He's just the one who I think is loudest about it and not talking to media and being effusive and combative.
And speaking of the not talking to media thing, so to go back to the game midweek, Canucks Coyotes, obviously it came out that the players had been told hours before the game Oh, like an hour.
Well, not Vancouver. They were told in Edmonton.
No, I think it was the Vancouver game.
Well, what I was reading, and again, I mean, I read that, was it Armstrong flew to Edmonton to inform the team?
Right, but they found out the day before, not through official team sources.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, we're talking about the same thing then. I was thinking official sources. You're right. That news was leaking out of the everything like a sieve.
Yeah. And, like, I feel very sorry for the players. And the fact that they came out and put out that performance against Canucks in those circumstances is impressive. To me, and I had this argument with someone on Twitter about, like, the Coyotes not facing the media afterwards. Yes, I think that was the best thing to do in that situation. But they should never have gone in that situation to begin with. Like, players should have been briefed, like, way before about this happening or the possibility of this happening, even if, you know, nothing's for certain, just being like, you're going to be asked more and more questions about this because it's in discussion. Like, we need you to be prepped for how to answer those, like, whether it's saying a comment or whatever it is. But instead, they were cowards. They didn't talk to their players. They're left twisting in the wind. And so, like, media couldn't talk to any of the Coyotes players about that game.
Yeah. The Arizona situation is crazy on all sorts of, like, I thought it was crazy before the news has not officially yet come out, unofficially. You have a team who has found many different ways to play themselves out of town. They have had multiple ownership groups that couldn't get anything right. And then you had the current owner who was running an operation that rumor has it was having issues paying hotel bills to the point that that hotels got together and required certified checks prepaid before the team showed up. You have Gary's fascination with the market, I think purely from a television perspective, and doing everything that he can over the years to make it work. And then once it's become clear that, well, this is going to be a problem playing in this university rink that can fit 5,000 people or whatever it is, with non-professional standard facilities. Oh, hey, there's an owner up there or a potential owner up there in Salt Lake City that wants a team, has expressed interest in expansion. Here's a solution. Let's have him buy the team for $1 billion. He gets the team. The current owner, Marullo in Arizona, gets the $1 billion and then gets a 5-year guarantee that if he secures a rink, gets an expansion franchise, and then has to then take that money and, like, pay the NHL $1 billion for the expansion franchise, which is an asinine expansion fee number. But
talk about failing upwards. Like,
I know, right?
And that kind of emphasizes, too, the amount of time the league has spent propping up this market. And they couldn't give the players the respect to, you know, talk to them ahead of time. Just, like, the fact that it's just, like, after all this time, it's suddenly come about all of a sudden. I'm sure it's not all of a sudden, but in terms of what's leaked to the media, it is. And, yeah, honestly, it's just insane to me. One, like, I mean, to me, there obviously is a difference between Phoenix and Salt Lake City, but, like, it's not like they're moving from one cultural hotspot to, a dead zone, I think. But Phoenix probably has a lot more going on. But yeah, it's not great. I also think, what was I going to say? Yeah, just, like, I do feel incredibly sorry for the fans. They've been through the ringer. But, like, when we've advocated for the team to move, it's purely from a point of view, is that the market is not sustainable there, and the owner has run it into the ground.
I wouldn't say the market's not sustainable.
In the way that it was currently in operation.
Yeah. Really, it comes down to ownership.
Mm-hmm.
And the organization has not had an ownership group that has been committed to making it work and committed to making it work in a way that creates sustainability. Like, the Coyotes have had full barns. They have had a passionate fan base. When they had a very brief window of a success, the market was very excited. But, you know, I think back to the macaw ownership of the Vancouver Canucks. Nowhere near as bad as what's going on in Arizona. But macaw, I don't think, really wanted to own a sports franchise. And he had really no business running the operation, brought in people who equally had no experience running sports franchises, and potentially put Vancouver into a position where, to use the words of Brian Burke, who got brought on board, were a phone call away from relocation. It can happen anywhere.
Yeah.
But it comes down to, what's going on at the top. Thankfully, for us as Canucks fans, McCaw found a willing partner in the Aquilini family, who ultimately bought him out. And the Aquilinis are a lot of different things, but they seem to be willing to invest in the on-ice product in Vancouver. They just maybe want to have one individual who wants to be more involved than just the investment phase. Yeah. But I do feel for Coyotes fans, like those who have followed this team, they have been dealt crap sandwiches for years, and to now suddenly be told, oh, hey, you know that exciting season in Mullet Arena where we're going to go and build our own barn and it's a real exciting time? Yeah, we're going to go to Salt Lake. We might be back in 5 years. See ya. And I wonder, if you're Murillo and he wants to build some entertainment district or something, which doesn't guarantee success, you've got $1 billion in your pocket. Why not build an entertainment district that doesn't require you to give that $1 billion to the NHL for an expansion franchise?
Yeah. Honestly, it's been incompetence after incompetence from the league and from the ownership. Wasn't that previous owner also, investigated by the FBI?
Moyes, I think it was.
Yeah. It's a mess.
He was the one who declared bankruptcy, trucking magnet or whatever.
Yeah. It's a mess, and it has been for a while. Phoenix is a weird place. It has a very small, population of people that actually come from Phoenix, right?
The TV market is huge.
Yeah.
That market, I think, is why the NHL has been so fascinated with being in Arizona, is the TV market.
Yeah.
But I was talking to a friend of the show, Jay, and he and I were sort of, discussing why is this working? I'm like, why not go to Kansas City? Kansas City is a decently sized market. You go to Kansas, you've got an ownership group that's expressed interest before. They've got their own building. They've got experience. I feel there's an opportunity there. And the market has had the NHL before. It didn't work out, but different time. Mm-hmm. He raised, why not go to Austin? I would have never thought to throw another team into Texas. But Jay raises a really salient point that there's outside of Austin FC, the MLS club, Austin is lacking any sort of professional sports attention, but the market is big, and it's a different type of market in Texas that allows for themselves to differentiate more than maybe a Houston might. If you think of our San Antonio, mm-hmm. to me, Dallas sort of owns that. Not to suggest, go to another Sun State. Yeah. But there are other places you should maybe try before you go back to the one that still can't figure things out.
Yeah, and Arizona hockey has given the NHL one of their biggest stars of the modern era and best players, but that does not mean there's something magic in the sand. I just feel incredibly sorry for Cody's fans. Can you imagine you've just had your generational player or best player you've ever had has now spawned another good player, and like there's something to be excited about again for the first time in a long time. And yeah. It's just been mismanaged for a long time.
Yeah, you know, something else that's probably a real sad moment is the fact we've reached the end of our show, Anna.
Yes.
Listeners have reached here, we're just wanting more and more from us, and yet here we are, you know, an hour in, deciding it's time to wrap things up. But we will be back again next week. We're going to be talking about the fact that the Vancouver Canucks will be playing playoff hockey. We won't know the schedule until such time as our episode happens. In fact, the Vancouver Canucks could very well be playing playoff hockey.
Yeah.
Sometime around us recording.
We'll have to figure that out because, yeah, we're not missing the first playoff game, home playoff game.
What? We're not? We're not that committed to our craft?
I mean, yeah, if you want to go on Twitter right now, Rob the Hockey Guy is speculating about not just, like, playoff opponent, but when playoffs actually start, because good on the NHL and its marketing, they just, like, haven't quite figured it out yet. Like, they kind of said the 20th and the 22nd. Now it's like, Canucks don't finish until Thursday, so will they play Sunday? It's a mess. We'll see.
Yeah, we'll know what's going on when we record our next episode, which may or may not happen on time.
And it may or may not have played a playoff game. We don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Playoffs are overrated. But yeah, we're gonna talk playoff hockey, and hopefully we record an episode and then get to record another one where the Vancouver Canucks are still in it. That's the key. That's the small steps, small victories, you know, record an episode where they're in and record another one where they still are. I gotta go back to the archives, but I seem to think we recorded an episode like back then. And by the time we recorded our next episode, things were dire. And then that was that.
Yeah.
Did
that go to five games or just four? No, it was five games. Hey, they won one game.
I was going to say it wasn't four. I'm pretty sure it was five. But the problem was like the way the schedule was structured and the way we record our recording schedule happened.
Yeah, that is like, unfortunate.
I mean, going into the series, it was like, oh yeah, the worst the Canucks will falter is in six. We'll win is in six. That's the worst. It should be Canucks in five, Canucks in four. And we and many others got it wrong.
I actually do remember where I was when Canucks crashed out of the 2015 playoffs. I was at a house party in South London. That is like still to this day, one of the latest I have stayed out. I think I left at like 6 in the morning. Came back with all the commuters. But I just remember being very upset and drinking my feelings. Hi, Mom.
Sorry, I had a pop-up show up there and the music was so loud.
At least it was just music. Could have been something more inappropriate on a pop-up.
Yeah, it could have been. So, Anna, what final words of wisdom do you have for everyone this week?
Like, it feels kind of surreal to be sitting here talking to you on the precipice of actual playoffs, not just bubble playoffs, and where they're in some weird hotel, underground hotel in Edmonton, you know, real playoffs. It feels very strange, but it is exciting, and I'm feeling upbeat again. So that Vegas game was really fun to be at, and that Oilers game was fun to watch. So I'm deciding to be positive, at least for now.
Words of wisdom for me: Canucks are going to get 4 points this week.
Here we go.
Book it. Take it to the bank.
Demko shutout.
He'll get 3 shutouts in 2 games. That's how positive I am.
That is positive. Oh my god, very quick off the rails, did you watch the Thatcher Demko interview at practice?
No, I didn't get to see it.
Okay. Just like, it's the funniest thing. Because he is just like one word answers. No. Yes. Mm. No. Yes. And then at the very end, he just breaks and laughs and says, "You guys are the worst." But yeah, like, I think they also, the media said, I can't remember who said it, but in an interview with Rick Tockett, Rick said that Thatcher Demko was really happy after practice, and they said, "Oh, we haven't seen that side of Thatcher yet." Yeah. So what I will say is big respect to all the media who have to interview Thatcher Demko after games, especially losses.
Yes.
It emphasizes the fact that I don't want to do that.
No. Words of wisdom from me is ask open-ended questions.
Nice.
That's it.
Nice.
Yeah. If you want to follow us, we're on social media at the C4 Podcast, except on Threads. We're at the Real C4 Podcast. You can get into the conversation with us in Gate 16 and C4 Discord at discord.io/C4Podcast. And if you want to support the show, you can tell all your friends and family to subscribe, listen to us, all that jazz. Or alternatively, if you have a few bucks jingling around in your pocket and you want to throw that our way, you can go to support.c4podcast.com, which will forward you off to Buy Me a Coffee, or as Anna and I like to call it,
Buy Me a Pint.
And you can do just that by throwing a couple of bucks our way to buy a pint or two. Now, if you have a few bucks in your pocket each and every month, you could potentially choose to subscribe to us on a monthly basis, like $5 a month. And if you commit to a subscription for an entire year, it's $50. If you submit to the subscription for the year, you get a C4 sticker. That is an exclusive sticker that only 1,000 people in the United Kingdom have. Because I gave Anna what I believe is a technical term of a buttload of stickers to hand out. But you too can have that sticker. I will mail it to you in about 6 months. Not because it takes that long to get to you. It's that you have to like pester me. I'm not that good. I got so much going on. Seriously, Anna, do you want to borrow my daughter for a spell just to, you know, feel what it's like to be a parent?
I'll check my schedule.
Okay. Well, on behalf of Anna, E4603, myself, Chris at Lightforce, we out.